I think this is another good example of why the debates around like whether Google's documents are part of the algorithm are like becoming kind of more and more unimportant over time. Like if you just follow what Google's saying in its documents, including the search quality guidelines, which is a future state of where they want the algorithm to go, you won't have any problems with these updates. Like these updates won't come as a surprise.
This is the Inbound Forecast, a podcast series about inbound marketing and organic growth for B2B companies. Here's your host, Gerald Arcus.
Lily and Aleida, welcome in the podcast. Can you first give a short introduction of who you are?
Yes, sure thing. I am Aleida Solis. I am an SEO consultancy. I have my own SEO consultancy that is called Orainti. And I'm very looking forward to share with all of you today.
I'm Lily Ray. I'm the Senior Director of SEO and Head of Organic Research at AmSiv Digital, based in New York City. And I'm also very excited to be here joining you both today.
Good to hear. And we are going to talk about the helpful content update from Google. For the listeners that don't know what the update is about, can you give a short summary?
I can do that. So the helpful content update is kind of like a new type of update, I want to say. It has some shared qualities to like broad core updates in the sense that it's very focused on content quality and almost like dating back to the Panda days where Google laid out a bunch of questions about what it means to have good quality content. But it's different in the sense that it introduced a new, what they're calling a classifier, which is something that can, on the domain level or subdomain level, identify if a site is producing too much low quality or unhelpful content, the content that's more focused on SEO than good user experience. And if their algorithms indicate that the site should be affected by that classifier, it can cause the entire domain or subdomain to see a ranking decline.
And then do you think there are different levels in that, in the classifier?
Yes, in Google's documents, they say that this is something that is weighted. So if there's a lot more unhelpful content, it can affect the site more heavily.
All right.
Yes, indeed. So a couple of two things is that this classifier, since it is something that is automated, right? Like what is important here also to take into consideration is that we don't need to wait for like the next core update as happens with the core updates, right? Like sometimes even 6 months to see that a content that we have been actively working on or optimizing improves. So in this case, Google has done a really good job this time in documentation, right? Like when they released the update, like mentioning that, yes, they it will be maybe not on real time, but next time that they wait everything that has been done on that website, we can see the outcome of our work without having to wait 4 months necessarily. Then another really important point that Lily mentioned, I believe, before is the weighted type of approach here. That is, we need to take into consideration that it's not a make or break thing, because a lot of people have said, "Oh, what if the content is helpful but not optimized at all?" And again, Google did a good job, even like featuring an example in that particular case, that sometimes there will be, even if it is a type of a domain site-wide signal, right? Sometimes there will be bits of content that will be unhelpful and non-optimized at all that will be hit. In other cases, even if it is not that helpful and is well-optimized, is popular, so there are other signals that are taken into consideration. So some of the bits of content might not necessarily have such a negative impact, let's say. So that is why it's so important to, let's say, to do a proper in-depth analysis rather than no indexing everything, as we saw that some people were starting to react after the announcement took place, right? Yeah.
So maybe the percentage of pages that have low quality content is a factor, but maybe also how unhelpful the content is. So I think there is a big gray area. Some content, let's say for an e-commerce website, the top of the category page may be relevant, but the bottom may have SEO content.
Yeah, I think one thing that's really tricky about this update is, you know, there was so much communication about what was going to happen beforehand. And a lot of us have, it was almost like subjective in a way, like, what does it mean to be helpful or unhelpful? Like, we didn't really know the answer to that question. And I think we'll probably talk about the results in a minute. But like, I don't know that something like having some SEO copy on your e-commerce page comes even close to what Google actually rolled out algorithmically in terms of what they were looking for. Like, I really do believe that they were pretty conservative with the initial launch of the classifier, and they're looking for patterns of like extremely like borderline spammy content on a site-wide level. So I think a lot of people were concerned, like, I've been making a lot of pages for SEO, but they're kind of helpful. Like, so far, those pages and those sites appear to be perfectly fine.
Yeah, what may be a bit scary for those people is I saw some tweets of Danny Sullivan, and he said that the effect isn't that big when you compare it to Panda or Penguin, but it is still a significant big update, but we don't see it. So what you just mentioned, there might be a lot of new updates in the coming days, weeks, months?
Well, there is a core update happening already at the right now, right? So right after, it took my attention that a couple of days after, it was pretty crazy, right? But one point that I would like to add to what Lily mentioned before, I think is interesting indeed. Like, I ask over Twitter with a poll, and it was 56% of people who answer or so, and there was like 600 people who answered, like, say that they didn't see anything. And it makes sense if we think about it, because of also what Lily mentioned just a bit ago, that it, like, it feels that they really tackle the really spammy websites right now. So the threshold, the bar is very, very low at this point on the level of helpfulness, let's say. So of course, most of us who are SEO professionals will focus on websites that tend to deliver a real product service value in general, that have a real business model rather than, let's say, made for Google type of websites, trying to catch whatever traffic just to monetize with ads, right? And speaking about the level of helpfulness, let's say, Google, again, when they release this, they hire the documentation, something like their systems are able to identify content that seems to have little value, low added value, or is otherwise particularly not helpful or helpful at all, right? So it seems that there are like thresholds or different levels there. And very likely, potentially, they have started with the lower hanging fruit, let's say. So we can expect in the future that it won't necessarily be the same, right? And that is not a reason for not doing nothing, right?
No, indeed. And do you think we can see the effect of the updates in the future? Because when there are small edits and a machine learning algorithm is getting better every day, we might not even notice it.
Yeah, I think it kind of makes you wonder if they did this by design. Like, it's going to be very hard to analyze going forward. Like, how much of this is a broad core update? How much of it is this new classifier? If the classifier is running all the time, like, we don't exactly know if a ranking drop comes from that. But I think it's very difficult that they kind of isolated it to a 2-week period of the rollout, because so many of us were like looking for any type of insights or data from that information. I think it'll be very hard going forward. But I also think, like, the communication that Google put out about the helpful content update in terms of what good quality content is and should be is so consistent with what they've been saying with broad core updates, with the search quality guidelines, with everything else. So it's like, it kind of doesn't matter if it's the helpful content update classifier or not, because it's like, just make good content and you won't get hit by these Google updates, you know? Yep.
With a product reviews update too. It's very consistent and it overlays a lot. So again, I actually love this to happen, because I hope that it stops the conversation about is EAT a ranking factor or not. It's like, it doesn't matter anyway, because there is an actual ranking signal now that overlays a lot and takes a lot of usefulness, authenticity, originality, and user satisfaction into consideration. Yeah. But at the end of the day, is what it all should be about, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's a great point. There's a lot of there's like a community within the SEO industry, right? Who are very focused on like building niche sites, you know, throwing domains up really quickly and like putting maybe like AI content or automated content. They don't have a lot of real expertise. And there's absolutely many different examples where that works really well on Google. You can make a lot of money. You can put a lot of ads on the page. And I think there have been some sites already affected by the helpful content update that are those types of sites. And it's interesting to think about, like, you know, a lot of those people might say things like EAT don't matter because they actually have data to prove that it doesn't necessarily matter. But this is a new way for Google to crack down on those types of strategies. So to Aleta's point, it's nice for those of us that believe in EAT. It's just another example of what Google's doing with their algorithms.
Yeah, indeed. And when you look at the impact, so it is not that big at the moment, right? Is it... how good can you see the difference between the core update and this helpful content update? Is there enough time to see what was caused by which update?
I look a lot at the outcomes of updates. I have like a bunch of different processes that I use for analyzing updates. What was interesting about the helpful content update was I had a variety of sites that I monitor that I was very much expecting to get hit by the update. I was like, any day now. And it didn't happen at all. In fact, a lot of those sites are actually seeing traffic increases. So it was pretty surprising to me that it did not play out the way that I expected. But, you know, with the variety of tools that I do use to analyze updates, there was a very clear pattern among, I want to say, like 10 or 15 sites that I found, but that's it. So with broad core updates, there's hundreds of thousands of sites you can find that have been impacted.
Yeah, right now at the moment, I think that potentially the best way to see them is like, for example, the Citrix Movers and Shakers report. If you go and see the ones that have really dropped in percentage from the release on before August 2025 to September 9, and you can see that indeed the websites that have been hit are really, really those like bad websites that pretty much aggregated or scraped content from other web that existed across so many other websites without a real added value. So, for example, a lot of lyrics or dictionary websites too. A lot of this content also will be content that Google anyway will tend to try to answer themselves with position zero type of results, like factual type of queries. A lot of them are very broad type of query. I was going through the product-related queries, e-commerce type, but I only saw one. And this one website was one that pretty much aggregated the reviews of others or testimonials of others without a real authoritative, let's say, original take on the product. So it was a very obvious type of website that, from what I could see in the trends, had been already hit by the product reviews of the update before too. So again, I can definitely see right now that the as Lily mentioned, the websites that were impacted were those that could have been like very well impacted before by core updates or product reviews, or that were really, really bad. And I don't know why they hadn't been hit before realistically. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. What I saw on the article you mentioned is, lyrics, ringtones, games, adult websites, calculator websites, coding sites. So there is a bit of a pattern in the type of sites that got hit, right?
Yeah, I think the one commonality that I've found so far to Aleta's point is like sites that are using somebody else's content as their main content strategy. So whether it's spinning up lyrics, or there's actually two examples that I found that was pretty interesting because they're websites that host a bunch of different product documentation or like product manuals. So it might be like all the different product manuals for your kitchen appliances or something, but that they're not the actual kitchen appliance company, right? It's like just hosting a bunch of different companies on their site, and you can get those product manuals on the actual manufacturer's site. So it was interesting to me because it's like, that's not necessarily unhelpful, right? It's still, you still need sites to like serve you that content, but it's interesting to see how the classifier is potentially like learning things, right? Because it's machine learning. So it's like, we've identified a certain strategy that people are using where they're exploiting, you know, like SEO opportunities and not actually providing original content. So it'll be interesting to see how it changes over time.
I agree about the helpful bit, although maybe like there's a thing, right? If we take into consideration the authority of the site, it is more helpful that the website that already has the authority about the topic provides that type of information, and if they already do in context, right? this other website is not helpful anymore. So I believe that Google is potentially taking context into consideration here, especially when seeing that the authenticity and originality plays a role here. So yeah, it's like, it's helpful that this website exists if all of these others that have real authority in this topic are already providing this information already. So gone. Totally. Something like that, right? Yeah.
From that perspective, it is related to a lot of other updates, and it is related to EAT and the trend that we are seeing.
Yes.
You think?
I mean, when I first saw Google's announcement, I was like, this is so consistent to anybody that's been reading between the lines of what they've been trying to achieve algorithmically for a long time. So I don't think it should have come as a surprise to anybody. But I also do think it did kind of codify a lot of different things that they've been talking about in the search quality rater guidelines with a new ranking signal. So I think that's new because we didn't really have a specific ranking signal that we could point to before.
And, yeah, I believe it's satisfaction and reliability at the end of the day. What Google is trying to do here with different type of, I will say, updates and signals and criteria that are taking into consideration one way or another is trying to replicate our decision-making process as humans and to close that gap that already existed and still exists a lot in SERPs. Like, how reliable is this? Is that question, because it's true that a lot of content that still rank out there is relevant, it's descriptive, it will match the query, but the information that they will provide is not necessarily authentic or necessarily as helpful as it could be. Like, I don't know of you, but many times what I do rather than just seeing the reviews, especially when it is places, hotels, things, restaurants, things like that, rather than taking the typical SERPs into consideration, I go to Instagram real photos of users, and the reviews are left across restaurants, opinion type of a review sites, right? To take the real take of the user. So I think the goal is trying to close the gap here and provide the authentic information for users that they can really trust.
And I think in the first message of Google, there was also something about that the content should be created by real humans. So my interpretation of that is AI content is dangerous, is a risk.
I think there's a spectrum, right? I think a lot of people interpreted it that way, even though Google never used the word AI. It's a spectrum. So there's absolutely AI content that's undetectable in terms of it looks like a human being wrote it. And I think that given the fact that humans can barely tell the difference, I doubt that Google can always tell the difference. But there's a way to auto-generate content where it makes no sense. And if you actually look at a lot of those sites that have been hit by the helpful content update, you'll notice this grammar doesn't make any sense, or this punctuation is a little weird, and it looks very much like it's just been scraped and auto-generated.
Yeah.
I think that we cannot demonize and say, oh, AI generated content is bad or not. In fact, I work a lot in international SEO type of processes, and a lot of my clients actually and translators have been relying on AI translations that they take as an input to accelerate the process. But of course, there's a real good native speaker who's actually a translator later on taking that input to ensure that it's good, to optimize it, make sense, and add that original take of a real expert in that case, right? So they take that as a base. And I think that it reminds me a lot on discussions that we can remember we had a few years back about also templated content, right? It's good or bad. It's a little bit of the same. It's how you use it, what is important. If you, of course, generate AI content without changing anything and just generate, add the criteria here, and that's it, the output, copy paste, of course it's not going to be necessarily helpful for the user, right? But or seen as authentic, or this content won't be able to communicate your unique selling proposition as a business or product or service, right? So what is important here is that we leverage this technology as a way to accelerate the optimization process, content production process, in a way that is smart, that is actually useful, and still fulfills the goal that we have in business. And of course, that cannot be done in autopilot.
No, so AI content isn't a bad thing. And I think it can be helpful in a lot of cases, right?
Yeah, just to add to what Elena was saying, what I think is also very important to focus on if you read Google's language is their focus on original content and the fact that experts can provide authentic information that can't be found elsewhere. So I've been doing a variety of different talks on this topic this year, but there's literally like a Google patent that enables them, that they filed in 2020, that enables them to understand when a document provides net new information that they haven't seen on a similar document before. And that's what experts can do. I don't know that AI can do that. AI can't necessarily provide an original idea that hasn't already been something that they learned from, you know, in their AI systems. Like if the information already exists, they're probably just going to like rehash what's already been written. But with experts, they can come in and provide a new perspective. And a lot of Google's documentation says we want to show a variety of different viewpoints. So the helpful content update actually literally says we're trying to elevate authentic voices in search. So I think they're trying to diversify the information that you see in each different result.
Yep.
The challenge that I can definitely see here, of course, is the cost of content production, right? You cannot intend to have like the top one expert in the world writing about your topic every single day, every single page, right? It also depends a lot on the business model with e-commerce websites. So like, what are you going to do, right? In terms of originality, or how much can different facets or filter pages can differentiate the content, right? So at the end of the day, I think what we need to do here is to be smart and integrate content generation within the workflow of our business. So for example, for e-commerce website, a lot of the information that we can generate that can be certainly original and helpful can come from our support system, right? And from the people who are handling the typical questions or doubts from customers and generate them sort of like FAQs type of formats, for example. Then, for example, depending on the business model, right? Like, and we see this also in our sector, right? Like Content King, I think that they have done a really good job with their SEO hub. It's a really good topic cluster that they have generated. And what they do is that they write about a particular area or topic in SEO. And of course, imagine if they had to hire Lily when speaking about EIT or me about international SEO. Well, we will tend to say no because we are busy doing our actual jobs, right? But what they do is to leverage with input, with quotes, with ideas, tips from specialists in that particular area. And that can provide this extra value, that can provide that little bit of expertise, right? So you can be very smart about how you do it. You don't, because I understand that the problem here is like the cost and the scale of it.
Yeah, I think for B2B it is easier. And of course, Content King is a B2B company. But I use that example a lot. For example, they have an article about content pruning. And I show it to a lot of my customers to show them how you can use experts that don't work for you in your content or that work for you. But yeah, e-commerce is a bit of a challenge, I think, B2C.
Yeah, I actually put out a quick Twitter survey this week for this exact reason, where I asked, if you consider yourself an expert in your field, how willing are you or likely are you to say yes when somebody asks if you'll contribute to their article? And it was like 66% said either yes, they're happy to do it for free with no incentive. And then like 20% within that said that they'll do it, but they like to be incentivized with like a link or like some PR or something. But literally like 66% of experts are happily willing to contribute to your content. And I have it all the time. Like Elena has it too. It's like, hey, can you just give us two sentences about what happened with this Google update? And so it's like, it's really easy to make that part of your content strategy. You don't need to have experts in-house, because to Elena's point, that can be extremely expensive. But I think that it's important to figure out a way to incorporate that process into your SEO strategy, and also to think about how to structure that content in a way that Google can understand that you legitimately spoke with that expert. Maybe you link to their website or whatever's like a canonical place where that expert is mentioned.
Yeah, indeed. And when you are listening this and you are you have a website that isn't in the English language, so the update isn't rolled out yet, or you haven't been hit, but you do have unhelpful content. What should you do?
Well, right now it has only been released in English, right? But we can expect that in the future, this will also happen across the different languages, right? So what I will recommend to people on the website is to review that, and you know about it, right? What has been the approach that you have taken? Yep. If your content has been written by, and you have followed a proper strategy, and you have an SEO who have worked with your copywriter, and again, you have done a good job and follow all of this advice that Google has been given consistently since a few years ago with EAT, then the product reviews update, and now also quite a few questions that they have released to go through to assess the level of quality of our content. It should be okay. I guess that the issue is that when you have generated thousands or hundreds of thousands of URLs completely automated, right? So that is when you need to, okay, how do I start tackling this, and how is it worthy for me to optimize it in the first place, depending on your business model or not? Should I just no index? So I share a flowchart a few days ago, like with a decision making process to be done rather than just no indexing everything or trying to optimize everything. That also sometimes doesn't make sense. Yeah.
I think like there's going to be very few companies. Based on what we've seen so far, there's going to be very few companies that this is a surprise, I think, if their sites have been impacted, because like they probably are, like to what we talked about before, they're churning out low quality content, making a lot of money off of ads. And it's like, well, that strategy can't last very long. That's obviously against a lot of Google's guidelines. But I did find a couple of different examples where I was actually surprised that the helpful content update appears to have hit those sites. And one example was a company that's like a tech company, but they host a lot of like code, like almost taken from Stack Exchange, like thousands of different pages on the site that have copied code. And it says this is copied code. It's like Apache Commons code or something. And I think maybe from Google's perspective, that's like a lot of duplicate content that they're finding elsewhere on the internet, but it's a legitimate company. So that to me was surprising, because like there's probably going to be some examples where companies don't realize that they're making a lot of duplicate content and the whole site can be affected by that. So I think in those cases, you have to kind of reevaluate like, oh, are we accidentally doing something that's actually against Google's quality guidelines?
Yeah, but I think the group of websites that will get hit and try to do everything right is very small, right?
Yeah.
I'm curious at the gray area that we talked about. How soon will Google start punishing websites that are not sure they are at risk? Because right now, everybody who got hit knows they are doing something wrong. And maybe that moment will never come. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, hopefully Google has gotten us, and I believe that is why they are going little by little, right? Like they have started with what we mentioned before, the lower hanging fruit, rather than negatively affecting websites that were actually authentic, original, helpful content, right? So I think that we will see this more and more little by little, also depending a lot on the markets, right? And you spoke about non-English speaking markets. I do believe that this will be trickier the smaller the market is, because like maybe not so much in Europe, but across Latin America, there is still right now a lot of content ranking that you can really tell that it's not the same quality level that we see in the US or even in European markets, right? And the reason is that there's not a rich ecosystem of websites as we do have here. So I want to take a look at, it will be interesting to see like, how Google weights that. and I expect that, of course, the rules won't necessarily be applied in the same way or as strict. Otherwise, for certain queries in certain markets, very small markets. So, for example, my own country, Nicaragua, like they wouldn't be out of pages to rank sometime, right? So if they are like very picky with them, right? So let's see how it moves.
Yeah, and I think sometimes an over-optimized SEO answer can be a pretty good answer when Google has nothing else to show. So that's maybe a problem too.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, I found a couple of sites where, again, it was like, well, this is kind of spammy, but it's also not unhelpful. You know, it answers the question. So that's a little bit tricky as well.
But then maybe we have Penguin for that part when it's just over-optimized.
Yeah, context exactly. definitely plays a role here, indeed. And at the end of the day, the goal is user satisfaction, right? So it's like, can you rank a content that is well optimized, people first, super helpful, comprehensive, popular, authority that is like the best, and you have a, like a wealth, highly competitive sector? Amazing. You can be really picky about it. But if not, it's like, yeah, how do you weigh that? How you ensure that people still satisfy and have that options and alternatives for a given query, indeed.
So we have the Google questions that you can ask yourself to see if you are at risk. Your flow diagram, I think it's on Twitter. I will link to it in the show notes. And I think that the most quick fix is the no index, but it's not the best solution. It's very short term, maybe when you have to do something today.
Yeah, it depends if those pages are bringing traffic, and if it is actually viable for you to feature something of value, unique, insightful, comprehensive there or not, right? Like if it is a page that, well, you never prune, never no index or redirected somewhere else because it was still ranking and still converting or helping somehow. So you didn't care about it and you left it out, but maybe now is the moment to take action out of if this is happening, right? Yeah.
All right. Anything to add from the update, insights, takeaways for the listeners?
I think this is another good example of why the debates around like whether Google's documents are part of the algorithm are like becoming kind of more and more unimportant over time. Like if you just follow what Google's saying in its documents, including the search quality guidelines, which is a future state of where they want the algorithm to go, you won't have any problems with these updates. Like these updates won't come as a surprise. So as we talked about before, I'm sure the people that have been impacted by this update are like, well, yeah, it only lasted so long, but like most webmasters, most marketers don't have much to worry about if they've been following the rules.
I agree.
100%. I think that it only shows the importance of SEO to be well integrated with UX, product, content, actions, to answer the question or to focus on the question. It's like, is this the best in class piece of content in whatever format that we can generate in order to provide the best experience to users when they look for this information? Are we much better than these other guys? Like, it doesn't matter, like, the questions about, oh, but is really, I don't know, like, authorship or authority really here? Do we need to really link out, yes or no? It's like, but the question here, those little granularities, is like, I don't care if Google are taking those really into consideration right now as a ranking signal or not. I care if it is going to help my users because my final goal is for my users to have the best experience. Because even if right now Google are not taking all of this necessarily into consideration, at the end of the day, what Google is want to simulate is user experience and provide the best user experience. So they will eventually. And if I am only thinking on what I am sure that Google is taking into consideration and play on that, I will always be behind, right? I want to be best in class. I want to be proactive, indeed.
Yeah, agree. So let's hope that the impact will be bigger in the near future. Thanks a lot. And all the listeners, thanks for listening.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to the Inbound Forecast. And don't forget to subscribe on YouTube or in your favorite podcast app.